Welcome to HockeyCast 3.15, where Alex and I talk about some ice devils and different uses for an octopus. I want to say that you are making quite a name for yourself in the Michigan hockey media pyramid, shall we say? Where I put a poll out on Friday asking people how they were following along Michigan hockey, and it was on BTN Plus, which was a streaming service that has not gotten the ravest of reviews from us and others. So I wanted to see, okay, are people using that? Are they, you know, checking in with one of the multiple radio broadcasts, and you have tied WTKA, and you're even winning over sort of longtime hockey fans.
I think that poll is pretty junky, though, because wasn't one of the options yourself?
Well, sure, but so...
It's like when a politician tweets out to their supporters, who are you supporting in this election? Naturally, there were going to be a lot of votes for you.
But we're not focusing on that, because that was obvious. People were going to do that because it was there was some jest in there, obviously. But you've garnered a few votes, and you rival WTKA. And you even got Craig to promote you on WTKA last week.
I just learned about this a few minutes ago, so this is new information.
I've had people come and tell me that you're doing a good job, and that they enjoy hearing you... not only just describe the game, but your in-depth knowledge beyond hockey and just the team itself is very good.
Well, I always appreciate those kind words.
Maybe you can transition this crowd over to your softball contingent in the next month or two.
Ran into some softball fans last night at Myers who...
Really? Who recognized you as the voice of Michigan softball?
They're softball super fans. They've interacted with me before, but... We had about 5 minutes to complain about the softball coverage last weekend. They wanted to know why WCBN wasn't there, and I said, well, the schedule came out a week before the season, and the first games were in Florida, so that was a little tight scheduling. But, yeah, if you followed the softball on BTN Plus this weekend, it was brutal. Each day got a little bit better, but on Friday, they didn't have a score box. And
oh, you mean like a graphic?
Like it didn't say the score or the outs or anything.
Or the pitch
count. And there was no broadcaster. So you were literally just watching, like, you know, a bird's view of the field with no context. And they didn't give us the live stats like we were promised. So you had to go on the Michigan Twitter to try and figure out, okay, where are we in the game roughly? And then to know, have any idea where in the at-bat it was, where in the inning it was, you
right,
had to watch intently. You couldn't get up and go, you know, and fold laundry or something. You had to be there the whole time watching. To know anything of what was going on.
Did you have your scorebook out? Like, this is perfect for old-school baseball fans.
It was perfect for that, but I did not. And then later in the weekend, they started trying to put a score box up, but every time they put it up, it was wrong. You know, the innings were wrong. The scores were wrong. So then it would pop up for 15 seconds, and it would go away. Finally, by Saturday, they mastered the score box. But they had trouble getting the broadcaster going. And so at first, he would pop up every, like, 5 minutes. But he wouldn't fill you in, like, this is what's been happening the last 5 minutes. He would come on as if he's been calling the game the last 5 minutes, and we just hear a snippet. So it would be like, you know...
Maybe his mic wasn't plugged in.
There's a strike, 2-2 count. And then he wouldn't speak for 5 minutes, and then you'd hear him again. It would be, you know, there's a ground ball to third. And it was just absolutely bizarre. And the volume was way too low again, like the Ohio State guys last weekend in hockey, where it sounds like a polite conversation at dinner or something.
Which
you know.
Is the opposite of the Penn State guys.
Yes.
From last semester.
And also, wherever the broadcaster was, he wasn't close to the field because he kept getting the numbers wrong and saying things like, well, I can't see the numbers from my vantage point, which makes you wonder.
Was he, like, up in a tree with binoculars or something?
And then on Sunday, which I didn't get to see, but the people were telling me, they would, like, there would be talking off camera that would make it onto the broadcast.
Oh, hot mics, yes.
Yeah, so softball was a train wreck this weekend.
See, you've left a vacuum.
Perspective, so... Hopefully, when they get back to Michigan, we'll be able to have WCBN coverage of softball.
You should have, like, an online tip jar that, like, sends you wherever the Michigan softball team goes. But this is not a softball podcast, although it may turn into one in a few weeks, depending on how many splits the Michigan hockey team keeps garnering, because that has not been good. And it felt like a split, didn't it?
I don't know. I was barely paying attention on Saturday.
One of my notes is actually that you had fallen asleep. I had to elbow you, and you were like, "What? What is? Should I be getting up for class? What's going on?" So, oh, there's that word again. I'm not allowed to say that word. Oh well. Anyway, on Friday night, Michigan played Arizona State. Well, they played them both nights, but on Friday night they played them, and Friday night was probably the better game. It took Michigan, I think, a little bit to get going. I remember the first series of the season when they played Arizona State, like they had three goals in the first 5 minutes or something, and we just started laughing because we were just like, what's going on? Like, I don't remember Michigan scoring like this ever. It's since probably like the Porto Kolarik days. But this time it took them a little bit longer. They got a couple of chances. I think the Beniers and Johnson line and York had one of his wraparound attempts. But Brady also, Cole Brady, who actually played really well in the second game, also looked like he played a few more games and held his own.
Well, Cole Brady was good in the first series. Remember, it was Evan DeBrouwer that got bombed.
That's
on
true.
The Saturday game, and then Brady held them. I mean, they still lost 3-0, but he was very good in the Sunday game in my recollection.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, you know, he's an NHL draft prospect, and he's played more, so wasn't really surprising that he had a nice weekend. And obviously, this is something we didn't talk much about, was that Arizona State hadn't played much. They had some issues where I think they were supposed to be against Penn State last weekend, and there was something before that. And so, like, they hadn't played in several weeks, which in one way can be bad, but it also gives you time to strategize. Because they weren't having COVID, right? This isn't like the Michigan basketball pause where they were
where
in their dorm.
You can't talk to each other.
Yeah.
You're locked they away.
They were just, you know, back in Tempe practicing. So, like, they were going to be, you know, rested and ready to go. And I thought their game plans out of the jump were pretty good. It's just in the Friday game, they got worn down as the periods went along.
Right, and like you said, near the end of the first period, Michigan got a goal. Bortolo had a shot from near the dot that Ciccolini redirected, I think, for a nice goal. He, you know, that probably could have been a little on the defense as he was left alone. But he's a guy that has actually started putting the puck in the net a little bit more. Like, we've talked about how Michigan doesn't really have, like, a Cole Caulfield super scorer, but they have a number of guys that have between, you know, 6 and 8 goals, 10 goals, somewhere in that range. And they haven't really played a full season. So, I mean, you're looking at probably in a full season, if you play 30-some games, you're looking at probably 5-6 guys that get above 10 goals, which is about 2 lines. So Michigan does have some depth.
Here's what I can say. If Michigan can get their core guys back next year, which is a big question mark, a top line of Bortolo, Brisson, and Ciccolini could be really good. But TBD on whether that happens.
That's true.
And obviously then you could have Beniers and Johnson on the second line if they come back.
Right.
And it's anyone's guess. We'll talk about that later in the year, but we don't know much. So
There are a number of factors that obviously go into that. So they're up 1-0 off of this redirect from Ciccolini. And it seemed like just after we'd gotten the notes written down, you look up and Morgan hits a great diagonal pass to Powers from the left point down to the right, below the right dot, and he has an easy tap across to Beniers, who's standing in front of Brady, and he finishes in an open net, and it's 2-0. And at that point, like, the game isn't over, but you're like, okay, the way this has been trending, I mean, Arizona State's probably going to get a couple of shots here or there, but, like, if Michigan gets anything else, like, this is pretty much done. And then they get a power play at the end of the period, and you're thinking, okay, here we go. And I think Brisson got 2 big bombs from the right dot, which has kind of been his spot this year, is where he sets up, and 2 good saves, I think, that from Brady there, but everything pretty finished the first period pretty well, I think.
Yeah, and I thought they were going to have a big second period, and instead ASU came, they made some adjustments, came back out ready to play again, and continued to kind of hang around until they got worn down at the end.
Yeah, I have Van Wy got hit pretty hard and went straight to the locker room. He was down for a little while. He did end up coming back, so there was no issue there.
Which, ironically, Nolan Moyle was the one on the line who actually suffered a real injury that night, even though we didn't see it.
Is that what it was?
Correct. Yes, it was said today in the media conversations. I think One of the Daily folks tweeted it out.
But is it bad?
It's not. No, he'll be back against Minnesota.
Okay.
It was an undisclosed injury, which led to him being scratched on Saturday.
Because the interesting thing about him was I think he was sat last year a couple of different times for disciplinary measures. And I know that they pulled him out of the lineup early this year for a game when like it looked like he hadn't had a great night the night before, and they're still trying to find out who to play. I think Grohl ended up playing a game, and LaPointe was kind of getting a couple of runs in there, and they were trying to find their maybe top 12 or 13 guys. So I wasn't really sure about that. It's good that this isn't going to be a long-term thing, because I think he does drive some play on that third line. But anyway, Van Wy goes down, comes back, and then the second period is a little more kind of janky, I think. They played okay, and they got some shots, but so did Arizona State a little bit, including a nice two-on-one from the one guy you probably don't want to see, is Johnny Walker walking down the slot, and Portillo, who played because it's a Friday game, made
which
a
I was
really
right
good
about,
save.
By the way.
You were right about that. I thought, you know, and that was the thing, and I thought that this would have been the transition, just two-man, obviously with Arizona State coming up as a more or less exhibition series, they could still play him again. At some point, I still think they need to go to man. It seems like it could be this weekend.
Yeah, I would think so.
But Portillo played well, made that nice save. And then Arizona State gets a goal off of... So there was a goal that Michigan had against Minnesota probably 4 or 5 years ago now. It was a game winner, and I can't remember if it was Alex Kyle or Luke Morgan. I can't remember who had it, but the puck gets shot in, deflects, and it goes off of the guy's face mask who's sitting right in front of the crease and into the net for the game winner. And it was like probably the craziest bounce goal I'd ever seen. It was a header, essentially. And this one was not too dissimilar because the shot from the point was blocked, I think, by Bortolo with his stick and is going way wide, but Chris Grando is sort of crashing the net from the dot and it hits him in the chest.
Yep.
And because Portillo is out so far because the shot's coming from distance, he just kind of like necks it, chests it into the net.
Yeah, I don't think he even really made any motion.
No.
It just went off of him.
Right. But Portillo normally would have saved it, but he was out so far because of the shot coming from from distance. And so they get on the board on a really weird goal and thinking, okay, here we go. And that pulled it. And so that was their first goal. Michigan's third goal was actually probably one of their nicest, I thought, as Arizona State is attempting to break out of the zone. And Cam York pinches in to hold the puck in, has a deft little pass down to KJ, who... but kind of skates backwards and pivots to his forehand, does not commit to anything, and the defender comes over to him and he slides the puck to Beniers, who's in front of the net for a tap-in that's not dissimilar from the goal that he got from Owen Power.
Yeah, they were pretty similar goals.
But those are two pretty smooth little plays. It's 3-1 at that point. We're heading to the third period, and then Beniers gets the puck down the left side after a nice entry from Morgan. I thought it was actually Beniers that brought it in, but it was Morgan who had the good entry, and Matty Beniers snipes home a great shot from the left side, and that is a hat trick for him. I believe it's the first hat trick Michigan's had this year?
I think so.
Yeah, their first hat trick since last year. I think Granowitz had one.
Against Wisconsin, yep.
Yeah, and I think that one of them might even been an empty net goal, so this might have been the first natural hat trick in a little while for Michigan.
This was a very... I don't know. When I was telling some people about this who don't really follow sports, like I was like, for something that is a pretty rare achievement, like this was a very boring game for it to be in. Like the Granowitz game with the hat trick is like, yeah, that was like a high scoring game, and that game was like 8-3 or something like that. Like this, like I probably won't remember that he had a hat trick in this game, frankly. And it might have been because they didn't pour it on after that, because the iron kept getting in the way, which was a bit of a foreshadowing for Saturday.
A little bit, yeah. I had that York rang the post at least once.
I think they hit all three parts of the...
Oh, like both posts and the crossbar on Friday night?
Yeah, that was my memory. And they were all in the third period, if I remember correctly.
And at that point, it's 4-1.
Yeah.
And the game's over, and you're just kind of like sort of playing it out, trying to get into the next game. And, I mean, that's that's about all there really is. I had one note that came down that Bortolo, he's just kind of fun to watch. He entered the zone and Jack Becker kind of got in his way, and so he just stick handled the puck like around him, you know, like you would if you're playing dribbling a basketball with a kid and you just kind of like dribble it around him and stuff, and he just goes around Becker. And those are the sweet little things about like Bortolo that I feel like kind of set him apart a little bit on this team, of like his superior hands and skill a little bit.
Yeah, it was overall just kind of, okay, this is about what we expected, more or less. It wasn't anything too exciting, but in line with expectations, and we'll move on to the next game.
Yeah. Is there a better time to play this series? Like, if you're, like, because they're playing two exhibition series, like, starting this season playing Arizona State's probably not a bad idea, because you don't really know what you're going to get. You have a team that's laden with freshmen,
yeah,
and they're not going to be the best competition you're going to see. It's at home. That's a perfect sort of start. When you're going to play them again, like, when do you want this? Like, do you want to do this coming out of the break again, or do you want it late in the season? Because this felt like, I just kind of hope nothing bad happens.
I mean, this last 2 weeks with the Ohio State and the Arizona State series was very much like the, why are we doing this? Like, let's just fast forward to Minnesota.
Well, at least, but with Ohio State, like, you have a chance to get 6 points.
Well, that didn't happen,
That's true. All right, well, we'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll discuss game two, which is not as fun, and then we'll take a look at a little bit of Minnesota and maybe what the rest of the league and tournament could look like.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com. Since you've been gone, I still do. I still go to work, and when my work is done, I get everything's the same. There ain't nothing changed. The sun still shines, and the rain still rains, and I'm still me, and you're still you too. You see, everything's the same.
And now on to the disappointing half of our podcast. So I hope you enjoyed that lively first segment, because this is going to be slightly more down in the dumps. I got there extra early because, like, I think I'm going to miss, like, where we're sitting. Because, like, it's a really, like, neat setup, and it's just, like, so there's not that many people there, so I've gotten to know, like, a lot of people, because everybody is the same that's there, and so there's only, like, 20 or 30 of you, so it's sort of like, you know, when people talk about having, oh, this is my, like, season ticket group, you know, like, I've never really gotten into that, because, like, I'm not going to talk to the people, I'm here to watch the football game, like, I'm not here to talk to all the people around me, like, I'll say hi, oh, how you doing, oh, I'm glad you're here, yay, go blue, whatever, but like, this was a little different, because you're kind of working, and you have to work with some of these people. Like, the few of the ushers are really nice, and, like, Christy's done a good job of, like, accommodating us in a lot of different ways, and just the people in that sense. And, you know, I talked to a couple of people I hadn't talked to all year, and they were very, like, nice and friendly, and I was just like, you know, I'm kind of going to miss this a little bit. And like, there's, like, four or five Michigan players that were out really, really early on the ice, like, just practicing different stick handles and shooting and stuff, and it was like this kind of, hey, one more time at Yost. And the bummer is that, like, you know, Michigan the last few years has not had the best senior nights. Like, they just have, like, not, and that's got to be weird, right? Like, having a senior night in your festivities after, like, a really deflating game.
Well, it can't be any worse than last year when Kel Morris did a Mola Rom and ripped our heart out in front of us for the second night in a row. I was gaunt and harrowed leaving the stadium that game, so at least it wasn't my senior night.
Yeah, that's true. And yours, we tied Arizona State. So the game ends 1-1. The first period it was more exciting than the first period against Ohio State, where it was shots were 5-2, but it was just very...
It was more of the same from Friday without the goals, basically.
So... there's my word again. I got it every time. Man starts a net. And the other interesting thing to me is that they start four seniors and Cam York. And obviously those seniors are, you know, this is their last time. And that's probably an ode to York, as we're guessing, potentially. It would not be surprising if he's gone too. And so you're kind
of... He's gone.
You're just going to take the stance of that, I say, while you drink your coffee. So, is there... I really got to work on that, Patrick. So, now I did it again. Anyway.
It's gotten into your head.
It has. But the first period is just not really that interesting. They got a couple good chances down low, and you were falling asleep.
Yep.
Okay. In the second period, it kind of gets worse, because in the first period, they outshoot Arizona State. I think it was like 13-3, and yeah, they outshot them like 15-2 on Friday, and then Saturday is more of the same, except they don't get any goals. But the second period, like, Arizona State looked better.
Yeah, yeah, for... she came out kicking for a little while.
And had more shots.
But ironically, their goal doesn't come on anything pretty.
Which is at the end of the period, because you're almost getting through this entire period, and you're like, okay, no one has scored. And this is after, actually, like, Johnson, Beniers, and Morgan all had unimpeded looks and shots at the net, and they all missed the net. Like, it wasn't even like Brady had to make a tough save, but you're kind of walking down the house, or, you know, within 15 feet or so, and you just, every shot is wide. And, I mean, that's just, I guess, the way it goes sometimes, but... And then you have, like, the power situation where he fumbles the puck at the blue line, and the guy comes breaking in 1-on-0, and Michigan can't get a puck in the net, and you're like, oh, geez, this is going to be it. And, of course, he shoots high, because no one was hitting the net. Which is how Arizona State scored. The puck was... There's a shot from the point here. It's 0-0 late in the second, and this shot is clearly going wide. And it just redirects off of Cam York, who I don't even know if he saw the puck or watched it hit him. I think he was checking his own guy, and just deflected inside the near post on Mann, who had no chance on it because the puck is originally destined for the corner or somewhere wide. And now it's 1-0. And, I mean, what do you do?
It was very much like, oh, here we go.
Right. Like, there's, like... They can't finish anything.
It's one thing when you can't score and then you give up a goal on like a breakaway. It's another when you can't score and then they get, you know, the ultimate puck luck goal. That's when you're like, oh boy, it's one of these games.
Which is what happened on Friday. So that's the only way Arizona State scored all weekend, was deflecting it not only off of a Michigan player. It took two deflections on Friday, but then it took like a huge deflection off of only a Michigan player on Saturday. And you're just kind of like sinking, because it's like senior night, and then now you're down to Arizona State, and you can't really, you haven't, pucks are jumping off sticks, guys are just kind of just a little bit off.
But that feeling didn't last long, though.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Right after it. I mean,
right, so there's like 30 seconds left.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Granowitz behind the net, getting the puck deep, and has a nice pass across the slot crease area to Becker, who walks in and finishes. And I mean, that's perfect, right? Like, if there's one guy who's going to score on senior night, it's going to be Jack Becker, who's been here for 4 years, and honestly, like, has been scratched because he hasn't really been a top 13 guy on this team.
Well, what was odd about that goal is that I immediately thought after it that Michigan was going to win 5-1, because I was like, that with how quickly they scored that, it made it just seem like they had the ability to do that all along, and now we're just like, oh, now we have to score, and then right down and scored.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that, you know, now they're awake. And then the third period is just masterful ability of just, we're not going to even try to score. I mean, that was the Michigan State.
Turtling.
Yeah. I mean, Michigan just is just firing away the entire time.
Yeah. And I mean, I think they got up to about, what, 41 shots in total. And it was interesting. They got a few power plays. We didn't talk about this in the previous segment on Friday, but their power plays, again, didn't look very good. It was just kind of unable to get it set up. They couldn't really get a good shot. But that wasn't really the case, I didn't think, on Saturday. I think Saturday, Cole Brady just played probably the best game we've seen him play.
And Michigan hit the post two more times.
Well,
one was the crossbar, one was the outer post.
Right. But they moved the puck better on the power play. They got a couple of dangerous chances. They got it down low. They reversed it. I mean, all the things you kind of want to do on a power play, they did. They just didn't get the puck in the net. So, you know, it's not a bunch of, you know, going 60% on the power play, 3 goals and 5 chances or something going into Minnesota. But I thought it looked better, and it's a little more encouraging, I think, going into next weekend, maybe.
It's just, I mean, that was just a very... That game is why the NCAA tournament is so bad, and we talk about it so much, is that that kind of game can happen in hockey all the time, and where you can outshoot the opponent 50-2, and then one of their two gets deflected off three bodies, and you hit the crossbar a bunch of times, and the goalie plays well, and... You know, in this case, Michigan tied, but plenty of teams even lose in those situations. It's just,
yeah.
There's a high degree of randomness, but Michigan wasn't sleeping. Like, there, if you know, I sent this to you, but I mean, if there were sort of the analytics that exist in the NHL, Michigan's expected goals for in that game is probably like 4 or 5.
Right.
And they got one. So sometimes that happens. That's why you play hockey in best 4 out of 7 to determine who's
right.
The best team, not one game.
Right.
But
not a coin flip. Then they go to overtime and. Did anything happen?
No.
I mean,
it was very
so you
disheartening.
3-on-3.
I was pretty angry that Garrett Van Wy was out there.
Yeah, I was kind of questioning that move a little bit myself, but
and ASU, I mean, they would go behind their own net and just stand there for,
and
like,
Michigan,
for like 20 seconds.
And Michigan, and, for whatever reason, had zero interest in pushing them out.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I sent you, and I don't know why you didn't find this funnier, but I sent you the image of,
I was probably angry.
Of Frank Beamer.
Yeah,
that legendary one of him just fired up and extremely happy, and then the logo, you know, the scoreboard says 0-0 end regulation.
Right. Yeah.
Like that was Greg Powers. Like they were just extremely happy to tie.
And I don't blame them at all. I mean, they got a point coming to Ann Arbor.
They didn't get a point. They're not in the conference.
Okay, but they got like they didn't lose. I mean, like you're building a program here, and. I mean, you've played against this team 3 times, and they've blown you out of the water 3 times, and you managed to not get blown out of the water, and you managed to walk away with not a loss. I mean, that's good for them. I appreciate that. But Michigan looked sort of defeated in overtime, and then you sent me the other thing that was pretty funny. Well, I mean, all your things were funny, but you said the Owen Power shoot the puck challenge, which was like, because he had the puck in multiple decent situations in overtime. Not necessarily in an odd man rush, but like, hey, this wouldn't be a bad place to shoot it, and he just kind of wouldn't.
A lot like Quinn Hughes, he's going to have to work on his shot getting better. But for him, it's even more important because, I mean, Quinn, it was an issue because no one respected him as a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And now his shot is a lot better. That's by far the biggest thing he's improved on since being in the NCAA. But in college, remember, I mean, nobody, you know, respected his one-time ability, but at least he had that dynamic ability to wiggle around. When Power moves to the NHL offensively, he's going to have to figure out how to shoot it because he doesn't have that dynamic ability. We see him try to do that sort of, like, he can't do the Quinn Hughes thing. He's too big.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're 6'5", you should have the ability to bomb it. I mean, you should have that ability. He doesn't right now. And he's going to have to improve his shot, and they're going to need to make that, you know, whatever team drafts him, more of a part of his game.
Yes. So... my favorite word. Blankenberg got to the net, and it looked like he had a chance to win it,
yeah.
And he didn't. And Ciccolini had a great look, I thought, at the very end, and I couldn't see if Brady saved it or if he just shot it high. I thought that was also the winner. And then I thought there was supposed to be a shootout, but there wasn't.
Yeah,
because
people were yelling at you about that very quickly after you tweeted it.
Right, and which... Yeah, okay, I get it. But like Michigan has had exhibition shootouts against teams in the past before. Which people seem to really enjoy. I don't know. It was very confusing. It was perfectly fitting for the weekend for me. I was just like, hey, if we're going to tie Arizona State, this is all just going to be one big mess. And that's kind of what it ended up being. And then there was the senior night, and it was nice because to see for those guys, it sucks to have to go out in a way like that.
Yeah.
And I think that pretty much shuts the door on them rescheduling the Michigan State game that's supposed to be at Yost. So that's what that is. But... I guess we can look ahead to next weekend a little bit. They play Minnesota, who, if you remember from the first series, that didn't go well. Michigan got
well.
A
it
goal.
Wasn't really a game in the sense that Michigan's guys weren't there,
and neither are Minnesota's.
They had more guys than Michigan did. They were hurt on the defensive
the
end, but they had their entire top six there.
That's true. Minnesota currently.
I mean, Michigan was at the nadir of their season, yes, but you also could tell that. They just couldn't score at all because they didn't have any guys. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Philip LaPointe is like your first line winger.
Yeah. So Minnesota is 5th in pairwise, if that means anything
it
at
doesn't.
All. They are number two in College Hockey News Power 16, which
that matters.
Probably makes sense. Their Corsi's around 20th. They score a decent rate in the power play at 21%. They have a good penalty kill. It's at 87%. They have seven skaters with over 0.75 points per game. I mean, they're pretty loaded with guys that can put the puck in the net. They have a ton of drafted skaters, and LaFontaine is having a phenomenal year. His GAA is at 1.56, and his save percentage is at 0.941. I mean, I don't know. I guess this always was there.
He has a really good defense in front of him. Let's make that clear.
That's probably true. I don't think this is a situation where Michigan's looking and saying, oh, I wish we had that guy, because I think it's worked out for them.
He wouldn't be any better than Mann on this team, I don't think.
And Portillo's been pretty good, too. So it's not like a situation where, oh, we can't believe we let this guy go. It probably just was one of those situations that worked out for the best, because Mann was arguably one of the best goalies in college hockey last year, has been good this year. Portillo's been good. So it just seemed to make everybody better.
So here's the thing about Minnesota.
Okay.
They, when you look at them, what they do differently than Michigan is that they don't have off days against bad teams.
Yeah.
Michigan's record and Minnesota's record against the top of the Big Ten is almost the same.
Yeah.
Michigan's might even be better. But Minnesota hasn't lost a single game to anyone below the top four in the conference.
Yep.
So when Michigan saw them back in December, remember Minnesota was 6-0.
Mm-hmm.
Their six wins were against Penn State, OSU, and MSU, who
mm-hmm.
we now know aren't good.
Mm-hmm.
And
we had inklings of that
at the time. But, you know, you go down the list, right? They beat Penn State twice. They swept Ohio State four times. None of them were close. They swept Michigan State four times. None of them were close. They swept Arizona State four times, the latter two by 10-0 and 10-2 margins, which is outrageous.
Yeah.
But against Notre Dame, they're 2-2. Against Wisconsin, they're 1-3. And
which is not as good as Michigan is against those two teams.
Yeah. So now the question is, you know, do you count those Michigan games in the fall? I mean, do those mean anything for this upcoming matchup? Because if we imagine those never existed, you'd say, okay, this team is beatable against a top-tier team, and we think Michigan can be a top-tier team.
Right.
Now, the memory of those December games linger, but this is a totally different paradigm. Let's just be frank here. Thomas Bordeleau and Matty Beniers drive Michigan's two most effective lines, and those two guys were not there. That alone is is night and day difference compared to what this is going to be. So I'm interested to see that. I'm also interested to know when the games will be happening, because we don't know. It's still TBA on the schedule.
Well, my DVR is set up for one of them at, I think, 8 o'clock. I think that's Saturday. So I'm guessing it's going to be similar on Friday.
Could be 11 a.m. We don't know.
It could still be 11 a.m.
Still TBA.
Well, Fox Sports Detroit currently has it listed on Comcast at 8 o'clock
well,
on Saturday.
Well, Fox Sports Detroit can just move the World Series of Poker reruns for the 11 a.m. game. But
we'll go with that explanation, Alex. That's probably how it's going to be. Yeah, I'm guessing that, you know, usually when Michigan goes to Minnesota, the games are somewhere between.
Yeah. And
eight,
normally they're on FSD because Minnesota has FSN.
Right. So they just transfer the feed.
And aren't those supposed to be renamed soon?
What?
I think they're supposed to be Bally Sports North.
Really?
Yes. That's what I wrote.
Like just in Minnesota or here?
No, all over the place.
Oh.
Fox Sports sold the naming rights to a new company.
I didn't know that.
Someday soon is what I read.
Oh. Well, you're a credible news source, Alex. We thank you for this. I'm just bummed that NBC Sports is going away.
Yeah, well, it can go back to Outdoor Living Network, which you may remember was where the games were right after the lockout.
I do remember that. I'm a little concerned they're all going to go to Peacock.
Well, no, they're going to go to ESPN.
Well, that's even better. So, the standings, I mean, we can go over these.
We have some new news, and that's something we can talk about.
Okay.
The standings are going to be based on winning percentage. We learned that last week.
Which is
ridiculous.
Uber complicated because you're trying to factor in ties.
Because this is hockey.
So what do ties or regulation wins mean?
For winning percentage in the Big Ten, I was looking at the tiebreakers page.
Mm-hmm.
Winning percentage counts regulation wins the same as overtime wins. And then ties are counted as, I think, half games in the formula. I don't know. You have to find it's
And
very
that's conference only.
Correct.
So for Michigan, it's straight up.
Yeah.
Because their overtime win against Wisconsin is
for Michigan, it's straight up, but the team they're dueling with, Notre Dame, has multiple ties, which then makes it annoying to try and calculate.
And Notre Dame's played like four more games.
Yeah, so I did the math the other day. It'll be in my column this week. I don't have time to do that right now.
Here's your teaser.
Michigan, I think if Michigan goes 2-1 in their final three, they should be fine in getting that third seed, but don't quote me on that. I have to rerun the numbers.
Regardless of Notre Dame?
I believe so. But Notre Dame is playing Penn State this weekend, and Penn State's finally back after a 40-day slumber.
Who knows what they're going to look like.
From COVID. Penn State's not a bad team, so we'll see what happens there.
Right, they just haven't played a game in since, what, late
And Minnesota,
January?
By the way, still has the inside track on Wisconsin for the league title, which makes this weekend extremely important, because these are Minnesota's last two games. So Michigan can play spoiler. But it also means the Gophers will be plugged in. So that should be exciting. Also news, the Big Ten tournament's been moved.
Yes, that is big news.
Sunday to Tuesday.
So it's not in the middle of the NCAA basketball tournament.
Which,
hooray.
By the way, that's now going to be, do you have an advent calendar ready for like 10 days of sports? Because Big Ten basketball will be Wednesday to Sunday.
Yeah.
Big Ten hockey will be Sunday to Tuesday.
Exactly.
And then NCAA first weekend is, you know, first four, Tuesday to, or Wednesday to Sunday.
I think they moved it a day.
What?
The basketball tournament starts on Friday.
Really?
The first round. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
With the first four being, I can't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday, but the like that Thursday at noon when the game tips off, it's now Friday, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, okay.
Because that makes sense.
Why not? Anyway,
sure.
Lots of games in a row, and so the hockey tournament will be Sunday to Tuesday. They also moved one of the regionals from New Hampshire to Albany, New York.
Which is the same for people like us.
But you can't visit a state, or now you can visit a state capital when you go to that regional.
I have a great picture in front of me when I went to Albany in 2008, in front of that capital.
In the state capital?
Because I'm from New York, so it was a big deal for me.
Okay.
That was the first time I've ever been there.
I like going to state capital buildings.
I enjoy state capitals.
Problem is, a lot of them are obscure, like Pierre, South Dakota.
Ooh, have you been there?
No.
I have not either.
But we could go if we go to the Sioux Falls regional.
We could, even though it's nowhere near Sioux Falls, and it would be quite a day trip. I just remember going to the Air Force game in 2009 when Michigan was a one seed and lost to Air Force. It was in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And if they would have won, my buddy and I were going to drive to Rhode Island because I've never been to Rhode Island. Alas, they lost, and it was in the middle of the afternoon. And I looked at him, and I was like, well, do you want to just go home? And he's like, yeah. So we just drove home. It was not great. But it was this weekend. Hopefully Michigan, if they go back to Albany, will do as well as they did the last time they were there when they won two games and went to the Frozen Four.
Yep.
Or they'll go to a different regional, which is probably just as far away as Albany.
Yep.
And so, all right. So let's talk about that for just a second, since this isn't the longest podcast ever. You think Michigan's in the tournament, but how can they get out of it?
So
like, what has to happen?
I was pretty sure Michigan was in the tournament until I read a piece of writing that definitely caused brain damage. But
well, no, okay,
it's on the USCHO website, and
you're not going from that though.
No, but here's the thing: reading that was like, oh yeah, there's no track record for the committee. This person could be on the committee, and we have no way of knowing ahead of time if this is what they're going off of. I mean, there's never been a selection committee before, and this is a person who is presumably paid some amount of real money to write about college hockey and produce this absolutely ridiculous piece of writing, which was essentially arguing the way they should seed the 16 teams is to give every conference two teams in, and then to choose four teams who finished third in their conference to make it. And if you finish below third, you're not eligible. And they were going off of winning percentage in your conference to be the third seed, which meant Michigan was left out. And they were taking, I think, three teams from Atlantic Hockey, which is a conference that normally only gets one team in. And
not because they're in the top 16, but because they win their conference.
Yeah. It was basically the equivalent of saying, okay, here's how we're going to do the NCAA basketball tournament. Big Ten gets two teams. MAC gets two teams. Horizon League gets two teams, because every conference should get
two
teams.
How many does Hockey East get? Or not Hockey East. America East.
Two teams.
Okay.
Yeah. So reading that was just mind-numbing. Because everyone knows that the Atlantic Hockey and the WCHA are worse than the NCHC, the Big Ten, and the Hockey East. Those three should get most of the teams, and those other conferences should get less of the teams. Especially the ECAC, that's only got like four goddamn teams this year. Like, everything about that was just stunning
to read. So if you finish in the top 50% of the ECAC, you're in the tournament?
But that could happen. I mean, I don't think it will.
Okay, but answer my first question is, like, you think right now Michigan's in the tournament. I think they're probably in the tournament.
I mean,
right,
they still
now
are stuck at seventh in the AP poll, or not the AP, the USCHO/coaches. Both of those polls have them at seven. The Power 16 will probably have them at seven, and nothing ever changes. And so I think they're in. It would be kind of surprising if the seventh team didn't get in, but I don't know. I mean, if they lost all four final games, including to MSU, and then either Penn State, MSU, or OSU in the Big Ten tournament, they might get snubbed. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a stab in the dark. We're basically waiting for the selection committee to break our hearts.
Has that happened to Michigan hockey?
Well, no, because the pairwise normally handles it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the last time Michigan was like legitimately like on the bubble.
And our experiences with the BCS in its original days tell us computers never make mistakes when it comes to sports. So,
is that how it works? Well, I think that's probably it.
By the way, there were people on the internet still talking about pairwise this weekend. Pairwise doesn't matter this year.
Yeah, but we don't know what does, so why would you not talk about it?
I'm just saying, don't religiously look at it.
Well,
We've said
no.
that many times,
yeah, yeah.
but we're just sending that out there
so
one more
time. I quote pairwise because it's a measure, right?
But pairwise, so pairwise is useful looking inside your conference. It's not useful comparing teams across conferences.
Yeah.
Because there isn't the interconference games that is essential to its formula. But maybe they'll just have a goldfish choose the teams.
Like Paul the Octopus?
Yeah, the octopus that picks the World Cup games.
Didn't he die? I think so.
Oh, we can always get a new octopus.
Are there plenty of octopi pusses? What is it?
Have you ever thrown an octopi at the Red Wing game?
No, I'm not a Wings fan.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just asking you.
I didn't put one in my pants to sneak it into a game, no. Have you?
Well, you can go buy us an octopus, and then he can choose the teams for us. And guess what? No matter who he chooses, because of the way the tournament's set up, that team can win the national championship.
Maybe I'll pick four teams from Atlantic Hockey.
They could all win the tournament.
That is true.
It's the year of the Holy Cross, or Sacred Heart, or all of those other teams.
American International.
They're actually decent this year.
I think, do you have one more story for us, or is this podcast over?
No, this podcast is over. Thank you for listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.15 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week where we'll figure out what day the NCAA tournament for basketball starts on and whether Fox Sports is being renamed or not.
Kind of like that when I go anywhere, like to cover games. I like to go early and just sort of be in the atmosphere, and then like sometimes you see, like, remember the 2018 state game,
the football game
with Devin Bush digging up the field and stuff like that happened 2 hours before the game. If you got there late, you would have no idea.
Well, and I did. we were in the car when that happened, and then we got out of the car. And all these people were yelling on Twitter about, like, something had happened. They were like, what? But you know the famous story about that.
I stayed on
the broadcast during the entire weather delay, and we were outdoors.
Oh, my God. Why were you outdoors?
We were on the observation deck, which is like below. So we were covered by an overhang, but we were
outdoors.
With
your radio? How did you plug it in?
Into an electrical outlet.
You weren't in the stands.
No, we were. So it's like the stands go up, and then there's an observation deck where they put radio. Like the.
So were all the radios out there?
No, just us and MSU student radio. And MSU student radio packed up and went in for cover, and we stayed on the air the whole time to retain the listeners while it's just like all this stuff is blowing. The wind is like 50 miles an hour.
That's ridiculous.
I'll show you the video afterwards.
Oh my gosh. What did you talk about?
Meteorology.
You have a copy of this game? I could listen to you call a game. I might want to hear you talk about meteorology.
That's what we called WCBN meteorology.
Oh, man. Well, there you go, Patrick. I hope you enjoy that one. I did, anyway.